Hi, everybody. Welcome to Core Light Spiritual Weather Report. It is January 29th, 2023, and this is Brad, and I'm calling in today from the Blida River Canyon in South Africa. I just arrived here a few days ago, and I've had a very joyful reunion with my beloved Leslie because I was out of the country for a very long time. So it's just delightful to return and be in this amazing place. For those of you, I know many of you on the call have come to visit us here and joined our retreats here. And I love the wildness of this place, the wildness of nature, the animals. We're surrounded by natural bush and the wild animals. And we're right in the mouth of the third largest canyon in the world. So it's an extraordinary place energetically, and I hope you can feel it through my words and my presence. I invite you to tap into that energy that will be coming through on the call today. So welcome. Last little logistical thing before I welcome you. South Africa is experiencing lots of load shedding. And if you don't know what load shedding is, it's in the U.S. we call it rolling blackouts, which is basically there's not enough electricity in the country. And so they turn everyone's electricity off for a few hours during the day. And fortunately, we have electricity for the window of this call. But if the call goes a little late, we may get cut off. So I'm going to try to end the call on time or a little early today if possible. We usually go right through to the end. So I'm hoping we can time it today so we're not getting cut off, but rather I can say a proper goodbye to you. Okay, so if we do get cut off, you know why. It's because the load shedding happened in South Africa. And this, we're going to talk about this today. This is part of the falling apart of old systems in our world. You know, we're living through in interesting times, let's say, where systems are falling apart. And this is as it should be. This is what needs to happen, you know, the falling apart so a new system can begin. Anyway, I don't want to get ahead of myself. We'll talk about that today. So I welcome you all. Welcome to everybody who's new to Core Light, and welcome to all of our old friends, too. For those of you who are new, every month I tune in on what's happening in the collective consciousness, and I'm always shown a few themes to talk about on these calls. So this month, we have seven themes, and they are healing trauma, ancestral, collective, and personal. The next theme is joy is the ultimate fulfillment of the spiritual path. Also, how grief leads to joy. Overcoming the fear of escalating war in the world. There's a lot of that going around. What we focus on is what we manifest. Visioning the new paradigm of the heart. And there will be an exercise that we can all do to help manifest that. And the last one is, what is the soul's perspective of these times? So for anybody who's new to the calls, I start by offering a guided meditation, and then I speak about the prevailing energies that are affecting us, and also about the spiritual principles that are most helpful for us all right now. And then we have some time for questions and answers, and we close the calls with a brief guided meditation or a prayer or whatever we have time for. Today it may close by electricity being turned off on us. Oh my goodness. So if you need to leave before the call ends, you can always listen to the recording later. We do send out the link to the email list, and it's also posted on YouTube. Before we begin with our guided meditation, I just wanted to mention a couple of updates. I was invited to London a couple of weeks ago, by a really, really wonderful foundation, a group of people in London, to read and record the audiobook for The Marriage of Spirit. And that's the book that Leslie and I wrote in 2000, The Marriage of Spirit, Enlightened Living in Today's World. And so it's interesting, we're just about to run out of books, and they contacted me to invite me to come to London. And when I told them we're about to run out of books, they also offered to publish the next edition of the book in paperback. So I'm deeply grateful to these wonderful, wonderful people. And we really connected deeply when I was in London recently, and we enjoyed each other's company so much that we've decided to do some more work together. And I've been invited back to London in May and June to read and record the audiobook of our second book, Returning to Oneness, and also to record some guided meditations while I'm there. And if there's time, I might lead an event in London in June, but we'll have to see about that. We're not sure yet if there's time to organize all that. So if you are living in Europe and you'd like to meet in person, hopefully that will happen. I'd love to meet you. Also, this group I'm talking about, this foundation in London, we've also decided to work together on some longer term projects, which I'm also very excited about. And so I'll share more about that with you another time. And the last little update is something that you've heard me mention before, and that is that we're still on target to launch our new learning management system in 2023. And that is an online platform that will allow us to offer all of CoreLight's courses. And as soon as we launch it, I'll offer Spiritual Warrior Training as the first course. And as I've said before, I know this has been a very long time in coming, with a lot of false starts and delays. And so I apologize for that, but I promise you, this is going to be worth the wait. It's going to be really special. So this is a very exciting time for me and for CoreLight. And I hope you will join me in that excitement. And we're going to be rolling out CoreLight's many courses and books, and you know, the courses will be re-presenced online, and so they'll have a new life. All right, let's see. Let's start with our guided meditation. Before we start the guided meditation, in case you're new, just as some of you know, but if you're new, you wouldn't know that Leslie joins us in these meditations by overlighting them, and in fact, the entire call. And at some level of her being, she's here with us, and there is a transmission of healing energy that comes through from another level. And so we invite you to receive this in meditation, and also just to be meditative throughout the call, and to, if possible. I know a lot of times you have to multitask, but if you can remain meditative, I invite you to just receive the transmission even while we're talking. Also, one more thing, that is that whether you're with us live today or you're listening to the recording later, it really doesn't matter, because we're all part of a field and we're all connected at these other levels. And it's the field of love. It's the field of unity consciousness. And at that level, time and space don't really exist. So if you're listening in the future, you are actually still with us and still receiving and still participating energetically. All right. So let's all, if you have the capacity, if you're not driving, I invite you to close your eyes and get comfortable and relax and just take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Breathing in the light. And breathing out any tension that you might be feeling in the body. Long and slow and deep, breathing in the present moment. And breathing out any worries about the past or the future. Just letting go. Breathing in deep peace. And breathing out stress. Well, let's continue the long, slow, deep breathing. And let's do a muscular relaxation from head to toes, as we always do on these calls. And I invite you to feel a warm liquid pouring over the top of your head like honey. Thick and slow and warm, and every muscle that it touches, it relaxes. So feel the honey pouring over your scalp and relaxing your whole head. Pouring down over your forehead and your eyebrows, over your eye sockets. Relaxing all of those muscles, all the many, many tiny little muscles around the eyes. Feel the warm honey pouring over your back of your head and your ears, over your temples. Relaxing all of those muscles. Pouring over your nose and your cheeks and your mouth, over your jaw. Your whole head being covered with this beautiful, warm, relaxing fluid. And just feel all the tension melting away. Focus for a moment on your mouth and breathing in through your nose, out through your mouth, feeling your jaw relaxing so much that it just hangs just a little bit, so your lower teeth are slightly separated from the upper teeth. Just feel how we hold a lot of tension in our jaws. And so if you focus there and really just concentrate on letting go any tension in that area, especially the back of the tongue, that can relax the whole region of the head and the neck and shoulders. So just continuing the long, slow, deep breathing, feeling the honey pouring down over your neck and shoulders. We also hold a lot of tension there in the shoulders, so take a moment to feel the deep relaxation happening there. Sometimes it's nice to visualize an angel behind you giving you a shoulder rub, an angel with very strong hands. Strong, loving hands massaging your shoulders. Just feeling the deep peace washing over you with this relaxation of the body. Oh, and let's feel the honey pouring down over your arms, all the way down to your hands and fingers, relaxing all the muscles. And feeling the honey pouring down over your chest and your upper back. Let's take a few long, slow, deep breaths all the way down into the diaphragm, filling your lungs up completely. And just very gently feeling that little bit of a stretch of the diaphragm and then exhaling. Very gentle. The diaphragm is a place where we hold on to tension. It's a place where the energy can get stuck. So by doing some long, slow, deep breathing and really filling up your lungs, breathing the energy, the light all the way down to the diaphragm, very gently stretching the diaphragm for just a moment and then releasing. Feeling this beautiful light of the divine filling up your lungs and your diaphragm. Long and slow and deep. Just take your time with this. really allowing this deep peace to fill you up all the way down to the diaphragm. And let's continue to feel as we breathe. Don't stop the breathing, continue the breathing. And as we do this, continue to feel the honey pouring down over your stomach, abdomen, lower back, relaxing all the organs. And the lower back, feeling this honey pouring down over your pelvic region. Relaxing all the muscles of the pelvis. And let's do a few more long, slow, deep breaths all the way down to the pelvis. Feel as you inhale, feel the light pouring in through the top of your head. You can visualize it as energy and feel it pouring down with the inhale all the way down to the pelvis. Filling up with light and energy, and then with the exhale, release. Just continue that for a few more breaths. With the inhale, breathing light and energy in through the top of the head all the way down to the pelvis. And with the exhale, release the energy. You can blow it out your mouth, visualize it as energy going out your mouth, drifting off into the horizon. So good to breathe. Long, slow, deep breathing activates the vagus nerve, which is the biggest, longest nerve in the body that goes from the brain all the way down the spine, all the way down to the pelvic region. And its job is to signal that the body can relax. When we breathe long and slow and deep, there is a physiological response in the body, which is relaxation. The vagus nerve creates that tingling that we feel with the long, slow, deep breathing. If you can feel that tingling, you know you're doing a good job of activating the vagus nerve. And sometimes we forget how important relaxation is, because relaxation of the body is the foundation of the enlightening of our consciousness. And we get so stressed in our world that we forget sometimes to just stop and breathe and meditate and relax. So let's all just give ourselves that gift right now. We've got nothing to do, nowhere to go. Just being right here, right now. Present moment is all that exists. And all we need to do is relax and enjoy it and breathe. Such a gift to relax. So as we continue our breathing, let's feel the honey continuing to pour down over the pelvis, down over the legs, front and back, over the knees, down the lower legs, over the ankles, feet, and toes, relaxing all of the muscles. And so now I'm going to be quiet for a few moments, and I invite you to do another scan of your body from head to toes. And just see if there's any tension remaining in the body. And if there is, just take some time to breathe long and slow and deep. Breathe some light into those areas and release whatever tension remains. So now I invite you to put your attention on the root chakra. And if you're new, that is at the base of the spine, at the perineum. And just feel how when you put your attention there, the root chakra naturally opens and relaxes. And it's okay if you don't feel it. You can just imagine it, visualize it. That's how it starts. So as you put your attention on the root chakra and you feel it or visualize it gently opening, relaxing, let's drop our grounding cord all the way down into the earth, connecting our grounding cord with the core of the earth, a molten core. And feel what that feels like. Feel the earth energy. Feel how grounding it is, and feel gravity gently pulling your physical body towards the earth. And feel how you're supported by Mother Earth from beneath in the form of the floor and the chair. And as you continue to breathe and relax, just feel yourself let go into the arms of the Mother Earth, just like a little baby relaxing into the arms of its mother. So peaceful. So nurturing. As you relax and let go, just feel this beautiful connection with Gaia, Mother Earth. Just feeling your oneness with her. We're not separate. Sometimes it's nice to feel and visualize that you're actually sitting inside the earth, so that all that is above the earth is maybe your upper body, that you're sitting up to your waist inside the earth. And that helps us to feel that deep connection that we have with her. So just allow that, that sense of merging with Mother Earth. It's so grounding and healing. Now I invite you to draw the earth energy up through your body all the way up to the top of your head, to the crown chakra. And if you're not familiar with the chakras, the crown chakra sits on the top of your head, just like a crown that a king or a queen would wear. So you can visualize that and feel it if you're able to feel. Feel your crown chakra opening. It opens up and out like a funnel on top of your head. The wide end pointing up and out. It's called the thousand-petaled lotus. And feel it unfurling petal by petal on top of your head, opening up. Such a beautiful feeling. As we do this, let's send a line of energy up into the celestial realms, out into the cosmos. You can visualize it as a silver cord if you like, however you like to see it. It's our core energy. And I invite you to allow it to connect with any source of universal energy that you care to visualize out in the heavens. Spiral galaxy, star, our sun, group of celestial beings. And feel that source of universal energy pouring down into the top of your head and filling you up with beautiful heavenly energy, celestial energy. You can visualize it as a beautiful golden white light. Filling up your aura and your body. Feel your body soaking it up. Every cell of your body like a little sponge. Trillions of little sponges soaking up the light. And as you do this, feel the deep peace that comes over you. The sense of luminosity. The sense of being uplifted. Held in love, held in joy, held in peace. It's a deep sense of peace in the body. And the peace is what gives rise to love and joy. So as you allow this unfolding, feel how your physical body is the midpoint between heaven and earth. You, that physical body of yours, what we call us, what you call you, is the midpoint, the connection point between heaven and earth. And so just allow that awareness to settle in as you allow yourself to feel deeply connected to heaven and earth inside your body. And as we all do this, I'm going to say a little prayer and an invocation for our call today. We call on Great Spirit, Divine Mother, Father God, the Self that we all are. We call on all our highest guides and teachers and all the angels and beings who surround us in the highest love and support. We invite you into our sacred space, and we ask that you please surround us in a beautiful cocoon of healing white light and love and joy. Bless our sacred circle, all of us, whether we're present in the moment or listening in the future. And we ask that you please guide our call today into the highest love and the highest wisdom, so that we each may walk into our soul's highest purpose, fully illuminated, fully loving, and sharing that love and light with the world. And we offer our deep, deep gratitude for this opportunity to be together today and to receive the love and the light. And before we close this meditation and prayer, we take a moment to ask for a blessing to all life on earth, to Gaia herself and to the whole of the natural world and all humans, and especially all the places that are affected by war, and all the hearts that are closed because of war. We send blessings and light to all people, to the whole of the natural world. May all beings know peace. May all beings know love. May all beings know joy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Alalaho. If you're new, Alalaho is Tibetan, and it means, isn't it wonderful? It's sort of like amen. Well, I invite you now to slowly bring your awareness back into your body and into the room, and begin to wiggle your fingers and toes, feeling fully present. And when you're ready, open your eyes and maybe stretch a little bit. Okay, well. Oh, thank you, everybody. That was delightful to connect. When we do those meditations, I can feel you all, and it just is so nice. You know, it's not the same as being in the same room together physically, but it sure is nice. So thank you for participating and for sharing your love and your light. So the topics for today, I guess I wanted to share the overall feeling in the collective consciousness of all three countries that I've been in the past month or so, which are the U.S. and the U.K. and South Africa. They all have a few components. And first, there's a general sense of wanting to get on with life and to have everything just be okay again. And I know we've all been through a collective trauma in the past few years, and there's been more division and separation and fear than probably most of us can remember in our lifetimes. And I think it's important that we all remember that we've been through this major trauma as a collective, and that we really take stock of that. And as I've been doing that myself lately, it reminded me of a story from the early 1990s. So, almost 30 years ago, when Leslie sort of randomly asked me one day, "What is PTSD?" And, that was not a very well-known term at that time. And I had a vague idea of what it meant because I'd read an article about it in a magazine. And that was, back in the early days of the internet, and not everything was online at that time. So I had happened to read that article, and I told her what I'd learned from it. And I knew that it meant post-traumatic stress disorder, and that it was a psychiatric diagnosis that was developed in the 1980s, and it was given to people who'd experienced severe trauma, and it was especially used for soldiers who were returning from war. So it was such a strange question. I asked her why she asked, and she said that her spiritual guides had spoken to her inwardly, and that they had told her out of the blue that every single person on the planet is suffering from PTSD. And this was back in the early 90s. And so, that really gave us both a reason to pause. And we took a very long time to reflect on what that meant. And we realized that in the age of patriarchy, which, is the last 6,000 or maybe even 10,000 years, depending on who you ask, there's been so much war all over the planet during that time that I think Leslie's guides were telling us that we're all carrying some degree of trauma in our physical bodies and in our psyches, probably mostly from war, but also because of all the other hardships that we go through as humans on planet Earth. So many lifetimes we've spent in survival. They're about survival and all the traumas that go with just trying to survive in challenging circumstances. And even if we haven't personally experienced war, I mean, even if we haven't been like in the armed forces, and even if our parents or other immediate family members haven't experienced war, some of our ancestors definitely did. And that gets passed down to us through generations. There's a whole science that's been developed around this that's called epigenetics. And it's the study of how trauma is passed down to us genetically from our ancestors. And it's a science that's shown us that we literally carry the traumas of our ancestors in our physical genes. And I know I've talked about this before, so forgive me if it's a reminder, but even if we don't know of any ancestors who may have been in a war or other kinds of traumas, and we feel like this maybe doesn't apply to us so much, it really does anyway, because we're all tapped into the collective consciousness of whatever country we live in, and also the planetary collective. And there's been so much war in the past millennia that it's affecting all of us, whether we know it or not. And so just to be clear, I think it's important to mention that prior to the past several thousand years of the patriarchal age, during the Neolithic era, civilization was mostly peaceful. The research of some anthropologists and archaeologists have shown that the Neolithic people were, for the most part, peaceful. They did not have the fortifications, and they didn't have the weapons of war. And it was a time when there was more balance between masculine and feminine energies on the planet. So, for example, both men and women held positions of power in the Neolithic era. women were priestesses and they held spiritual power, and men held positions of power in terms of leadership and you know, creating infrastructure in the community and so forth. And so it was a time when people worshiped the great earth mother, the goddess, and they revered fertility. And so during the age of patriarchy, we've lost that. We've lost that honoring of the feminine. We've lost the balance between the masculine and the feminine. But it's coming back. You know, we're rebuilding that. So part of our path of awakening now is that we're all working on balancing masculine and feminine energies within us, also known as the yin and the yang, as the Taoists describe it. And this is one of the most important steps that helps us open the heart more permanently. And I could talk a long time about this because it's so interesting to me, but especially the part about the shift from the Neolithic age to the patriarchal age. And I really don't want to go into it too much because it's a bit off topic for today and we'll go over time. But it's definitely a fascinating subject, especially because we're at the turning of the next age now. So I've always felt like learning about the shift that happened at the turning of the previous cycle is very helpful for today, since we're navigating similar territory, you know, similar massive change. And so if this subject interests you, there are a couple of books I recommend that I thought I'd just mention for you today. One of them is The Chalice and the Blade, Our History, Our Future. The author is Rian Isler, E-I-S-L-E-R. And the second one is The Fall, The Insanity of the Ego in Human History and the Dawning of a New Era. I'll say that again. The Fall, The Insanity of the Ego in Human History and the Dawning of a New Era by Steve Taylor is the author. I wrote a little summary of those two books in my book, Living with Enlightenment, which is available on our website at corelight.org, and it's in a chapter called The Resurgence of the Feminine. So if that interests you, you can go check that out. So anyway, the trauma of war, it's in the collective unconscious of the whole planet, and it's in our physical genes. And so I guess what I'm really aware of is that whether we're conscious of it or not, we're all in a healing process from trauma of some kind, but especially war. And so we're working at some level of our beings with healing not only recent traumas of the past few years, but also collective trauma. And we may not even be aware of what that is. I know I've spoken about it on these monthly spiritual weather reports before, but I think it's a good reminder, because it's the thing that seems to be up for us right now. So I thought I would talk about it a bit today. I'd also say that an aspect of this that seems to be especially up for many of us right now is what's known as healing ancestral karmas. Healing ancestral karmas. And that's in line with the scientific concept of epigenetics, where trauma is passed down to us genetically from our ancestors. So from a spiritual perspective, you could look at this as healing the karmas of our ancestors, and karmas just means actions. And maybe it doesn't even matter whether you look at this spiritually or scientifically, but I do think both are important to be aware of. I know a lot of people, and I include myself in this, who've been having very strange symptoms in the body that are not easily explained by doctors or by any kind of rational analysis. And it's actually been going on for a couple of years or more now. For some people, I know there are like aches and pains and rashes and other things like that that seem to appear kind of at random, and they don't really have any any Western medical diagnosis or a cure. I can give you my personal example of this. For me, it manifested about a year and a half ago as a very intense pain in my physical body, and it was musculoskeletal, and it was in my right hip and my lower back. And of course, I tried all of my usual tricks, but none of them worked, you know, for healing it, like massage and acupuncture and chiropractic, and also diet and natural supplements and yoga and stretching and all the, you know, physical work on the body. So after a few months and the pain was still increasing, it got so bad that I thought it might be serious. So I even thought it might be some kind of cancer or something, because it was so extreme. So finally and reluctantly, I decided to go to Western medicine and get a lot of imaging done. And I got x-rays and MRIs and CT scans and, you know, the whole body, like everything from the neck down to the knees. And I also had blood tests done and a physical and other kinds of medical tests done. And nothing showed up. Nothing. I was told by every single doctor that there was nothing wrong with me. And in fact, they all said the same thing. They said, you know, I have the markers of a very healthy young person. I said, well, you know, why, if that's true, why do I feel like I'm 100 years old sometimes? And that was how bad the pain was. And so anyway, I share this story with you because at that point I realized that there was something else going on. And I knew at that point that it was really about healing ancestral karmas. And so I share it because if you're having any kind of strange things going on with your body, you know, you might be going through something similar to me. And just so you know, you're not alone. And even if it's something diagnosable by Western medicine, it still might be something to do with healing ancestral karmas. In fact, it probably is, because this is up right now. It's just what a lot of us are doing. You know, we came in with this agreement to do this work. So in my case, I had a sense of what those ancestral karmas might be, but some of it was very, very old. It went back so many generations that I just wasn't really sure exactly what it was. It felt like I was somehow helping to heal traumas and karmas, especially of men, the men in my lineage. And I'm sure that that's at least partly because I'm wearing a male body this lifetime. And I'm sure as souls, you know, we all choose the gender of our physical bodies for many reasons, but also specifically for knowing that we're going to be working with the ancestral karmas of that gender, that same gender in our own lineage. That's what I've gained, you know, that's what I've gleaned from this experience that I've just had in the last couple of years. So anyway, I had this clear knowing that there were many, many men in my lineage going back so many generations, maybe even 1,000 years or more, that's how it felt. And they were all traumatized by war and these survival issues that I was talking about, and and other things too. And the vast majority of them had lived lives that were somehow unfulfilled in some way. I think that was the main theme, was unfulfillment. Like they had to work their whole lives just to feed families and provide shelter for their families. And, you know, they may have not liked what their jobs were, but they did the work anyway because they had to. And they might have carried a sense of enslavement to a system, you know, to the system of money or to the governmental system, or felt a sense of oppression by some kind of authority figure, or maybe they had to go to war and they didn't want to. They may have even been injured from war and had to live the rest of their lives with some kind of limitation, some kind of physical disability, I also had the sense that some of them were pioneers. You know, many of us have had ancestors who were pioneers, and they were moving from other countries hoping to discover a better way of life. And, you know, those were very difficult lives, and they carried a lot of fear about the experience, and sometimes maybe sadness or anger or whatever intense emotions were around that whole experience of pioneering. And I think many of their lives were cut short for whatever reason. Maybe it was illness or, you know, war or whatever the reason. And they died somehow feeling cheated or maybe betrayed by life in some way. So all of those scenarios that I just described, those were not uncommon for most of our ancestors. And I believe I speak for all of us when I say that. So I share this with you just to give you kind of a picture of what I saw. And I guess, you know, I don't need to describe it any further because I think you get the idea. But these are the kind of lifetimes that we've probably all lived. You know, we probably in our past lives were some of our own ancestors doing those things. And so as I became more aware of all of this, I practiced witnessing it. I did lots of different kinds of processing work to help heal it. Things that I've mentioned before, like yoga and, you know, stretching and physical exercise, things like walking and swimming and also meditating, of course, and, you know, journaling and processing and resting and doing all the things we know to do to heal. Especially I went to some different types of energy workers and healers that I like to work with, and doing the marriage of spirit processing practices. And if anybody is new to the calls, the marriage of spirit, as I said before, it's a book that Leslie and I wrote. It has some very simple but powerful journaling techniques in it for healing our consciousness, and you can find it on our website at corelight.org, and it's also sold on any online bookseller. And in the U.S., it's even in any bookstore. You can order it in bookstores. So anyway, as I did that healing work, and I really was practicing my self-care a lot for all of that time, I got the very clear sense that my entire lineage, all of the men that I was just talking about, going back, you know, over 1,000 years or so, they were all watching me. I could feel them. They were literally all surrounding me, and they were cheering. They were applauding. They were celebrating this life with me, because what I was doing by being conscious of all of this and witnessing it and doing the healing work, and I would say, and especially by living my life in a fulfilling way, and in a joyful way, all of that was helping them to heal their traumas and their sense of unfulfillment. And I can't tell you what a powerful experience that was to become aware of that. And it really made me take stock of my life. And I just feel so incredibly happy and so grateful for this life. For getting to live this life this time around. And this applies to all of us. I'm not just talking about me. I'm sharing with it because it definitely applies to all of us. If you think about it, we live in a time of such material abundance. It's not just about material abundance. That's one thing. But I'm just saying, you know, just having a home with electricity and hot and cold running water and supermarkets full of food and a car and on and on and on. You know, this is a lifestyle that the kings and queens of past times couldn't even have conceived of, even not so long ago. And it's so much more than just material abundance. We're living in a time where we just have so much more choice of how to live our lives than in prior incarnations. And I think of how I've been able to choose following my heart in this lifetime, you know, and taking all kinds of risks and choosing to live creatively. You know, where though all of those other men couldn't do that for whatever reasons, and all of the lifetimes that we lived as women, you know, those were incredibly limited lifetimes. If you were a woman, you were always a man's possession, whether it was your father or your husband, you were chattel, you know, you were owned by a man. And for the most part, if you didn't get married and have children and serve your husband, you were an outcast. And, you know, you couldn't leave a bad marriage. That was not an option. You had to stay in bad marriages because it meant being ostracized from the community and death if you left. You know, you couldn't survive in those times without community. And so anyway, I realized that just living a life of following my heart and living creatively and doing what I feel spirit is guiding me to do in any moment and taking those risks that come with that, that's a fulfillment, not just for me, but for the whole lineage. And the result of living that way is a life of joy. And I think one of the main spiritual principles that we're all here to learn is this one. And it's that, it reminds me of that old saying, jump and the net will appear. You've heard that. And what that means is when we learn to follow our hearts and we follow our spiritual guidance and when we learn to put our spiritual path first, we're learning to overcome fear. And we're strengthening our faith in spirit. And then we're living an increasingly fulfilling life. We're doing what we love. And so it becomes a life of love and creativity and joy. And this is a huge healing at so many levels for our ancestors and for us personally, because the ultimate fulfillment of the spiritual path is joy. And I know I'm sorry, it gets me choked up. I know when I first discovered that, I was so shocked. So I feel like we should just pause for a moment here so we can kind of take stock of this and just remember it and let it in. And I guess I feel like repeating it because it's one of the most important spiritual lessons that we're here to learn. So I'm just going to say it again so we can all just breathe this in. The ultimate fulfillment of the spiritual path is joy. So I invite you to just receive that and allow that. And I know I talk about joy a lot on these calls, and I hope you don't get tired of it. But I do it because I know that we're all being invited into deeper levels of joy right now. We're being given an opportunity to focus more on joy than ever before. And living in joy is a healing in itself. And like I said, it's not just for us personally, but it's for our ancestors and for the collective also. You know, and I would say that joy is such a great antidote to the energy of war. And I know sometimes it's not easy, and maybe it's not even possible to access joy with all the challenges that we're facing in the world right now. And I just want to be clear, I am not saying that we should deny or suppress our feelings just to pretend like we're joyful. practicing joy is not about avoiding or doing spiritual bypassing of our emotions. It's not what I'm saying. And I can imagine there might be some people listening to the call who might be having a reaction to what I'm saying. So sorry. If that's you, I know you might be thinking, well, WTF, why is this guy telling us to be joyful when there's so much horror in the world and there's just so much to be worried about, and I don't feel joyful at all, and I don't even want to feel joyful because the world's so awful. And so I honor that. I really honor that. And if that's you, or even if you have moments of that, I would say, you know, there's nothing wrong with feeling whatever you're feeling. It's very, very important to feel the despair. Feel the anger, feel the fear, feel whatever you need to feel. It's all okay. There's plenty to feel angry about and sad about and fearful about. And in fact, if you're not feeling those things, as I say often on these calls, you know, at least some of the time, if you're not feeling those things, then there's probably something wrong, because there's enough going on that makes us feel those things. But anyway, I would invite you, if that's you, I would invite you to practice witnessing. And we explain witnessing in the Marriage of Spirit book. If you don't know what that is, there's a whole chapter on it. And I talk about it a lot on these calls. So if you practice witnessing the emotions and remembering that they're not who you are pure awareness, you are pure love, the emotions are just passing through you. And when you practice witnessing, you can let the emotions rage, but you remain centered and balanced in your knowing who you truly are. And it reminds me, there's a great metaphor that Leslie used to use for this practice, and it's an image that really illustrates what witnessing feels like, and it's been very helpful to me, so I want to share it with you, or if you've been around a long time, this is just a reminder. But witnessing is like tying yourself to the mast of a ship while it's on a stormy sea. And the ship gets tossed around on the waves, and the lightning is striking all around you, the storm clouds, the wind is blowing, but you remain in the center. You remain tied to the mast. You are balanced, and you're just bobbing around watching all this. And it's because with witnessing, there's this part of you, even if it's a very small part in the beginning, that's watching. And it's a part of you that's observing from a neutral place. And that part remembers that you're not the emotions. The emotions are raging like the storm, and they pass through you. But the eternal part of you remains strapped to the mast of the ship. And you know that everything's okay, and you're going to be fine, and that this too shall pass. And there was a great English painter in the early 1800s, J.M.W. Turner, who actually did this. He strapped himself to the mast of a ship during a storm so that he could experience the storm at sea and then paint it. And he did. He created some amazing and very famous paintings of these violent storms at sea. So you can actually Google that. You can, or excuse me, I don't like to use that word. You can do an online search. You can find them online and look at them, and they help remind you of the witnessing practice. At least that's how it's been for me. I used to find that very helpful, and I know Leslie did also way back in the 80s when she was on her path before her awakening. Anyway, so if you're new and you want to know more about witnessing, like I said, there's a chapter in the Marriage of Spirit book about it. Also, I talked a lot about it on the November Spiritual Weather Report, and those recordings are free and downloadable on our website. Okay, so what I'm saying here is that after we go through a process where we experience emotions like sadness or anger or fear or whatever it is, then it's great to move back into the joy as soon as we feel ready to do that. Because Spirit is opening this door very wide for us right now. The more of us who can access that vibration of joy, the better things are going to go for the planet. And we all know there's some very challenging things happening on the planet right now. So this is a practice we're all being invited into. It's like the past few years we've been watching like a massive wave of shadow rising up. And, you know, it's scary and it looks like it's going to take over the world and it's uncomfortable and it makes us angry and it makes us depressed and feel terrible. And it's a trauma. It's traumatizing. But the truth of this is that this is a necessary part of this cycle that we're all going through as a species right now. We're moving into our next phase of evolution in human consciousness, which is about moving into the heart. Right? It's the new paradigm of the heart, as we like to call it. And before we can get established there, it's essential to heal and clear all of the shadow aspects. And so to do that, we have to be able to see the shadow and name it. And so that's what this has been all about and continues to be about. It's like we're all getting this, we're getting this really good look at this shadow side of human consciousness. So we can see it in all its glory and, you know, name it and process it and witness our reactions to it and then shine a light on it. And we know what happens when we shine a light on a shadow, right? It disappears. So this is a really important perspective for all of us to hold on to as we surf that wave. You know, these are waves in consciousness that we're surfing, and to remember, the more we practice witnessing, the more we process our consciousness, our reactions to this stuff, the better we're going to be at being able to stay on our surfboards. And inevitably, you know, we're going to get tumbled by the waves sometimes, but you know, it is possible to stay on our surfboards, even through these really challenging times. I know many people who are doing really well at this. And many of you are on this call, so you know who you are. And it's interesting that I was thinking about what to talk about and share on this call today. And it's interesting, all the things that we might do to heal from trauma are also the same things that bring us joy. And it's a great practice to make that list of all those things that help you heal and bring you joy. So I'm sure you can make your own list. And I imagine, you know, we've all been practicing these things, probably some of us for many years, even decades probably, but I did make a list for today that I can share now, just in case it's helpful, in case there may be some things you didn't think of. So I'm going to look at my list here. First, foremost, we have to want to heal, and we have to want to live in joy. The desire to have these things is the most important thing, because if we don't have the desire, we're not going to manifest it. So that's good to take a look at. Number two is it's really important to make a commitment to receive the healing and to receive the joy, because everything begins with the commitment. So maybe for home practice, we can all take a little time to ask ourselves these questions. So if we're desiring it, if we're ready to make a commitment to it. Number three, as we've talked about today already, processing consciousness. That's probably right up at the top of the list here too. It means finding whatever techniques work best for us to shift our mind and our emotions and to let go of any traumas that we might be holding on to. And we offer some very simple but very powerful journaling techniques in the Marriage of Spirit book and in our other books, but there are countless methods out there nowadays. So it's just important to find whatever tools work for you and just to be sure to use something, whatever works, whether it's the marriage of spirit or something else, it doesn't matter. Okay, the next thing on my list, seeking help from others. So whether you've got a friend who you trust or a professional therapist or a spiritual teacher, we can process a lot of things on our own if we have good tools like the marriage of spirit, but sometimes it's really important to get some outside support. You know, we need somebody else to help us go a little deeper. Okay, the next thing on the list is being in community. And that's a great one. Social interactions, being with friends. It's very important for supporting our mental health and helping us to feel happy. And then the next thing on the list is many, many things that fall under the same category. All the wonderful practices that help us heal and feel better physically. So those are the things we all know, like, you know, getting a massage or getting acupuncture, meditating, dancing, singing, being creative. Any kind of creative expression is great for healing and for moving energy through us and generating joy in the body. Walking, sports of any kind, you know, gentle stretching like yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong. Being in nature, smiling, laughing. Laughing might be one of the most important things. Humor is very serious. So these are all the things that release happy hormones in the body, and they're all free, and they're all waiting for us anytime we want them. We can just do any of these things, and we have them. So I invite you to, you know, practice that. Sometimes we forget about that. It's basic self-care these days, not a luxury. All right, so let's move on to the next topic. I wanted to talk next about grief because I felt that in the collective consciousness of all the places I visited, even though it might be unconscious for a lot of people, it's still there, and we're all experiencing it at some level of our being. We're going through the five stages of grief. And I know I've talked about this before in these calls, but it's been a very long time, so this might be just a little bit of a good reminder for all of us. And we're all experiencing the loss of our old way of life. And so there's grief associated with that loss. And things are just not the same. They're not working the way they used to. Like I was talking about on the beginning of the call, the systems are falling apart everywhere. And we've been noticing this for a long time. I'm trying to decide. We're short on time, and I don't want to belabor the point here because we all know how the system is falling apart. So let me just skip ahead. I don't think I need to talk too much about it. I guess I do want to mention my experience here in South Africa. It was a bit shocking. I was in Johannesburg for about a week, and like I said on the call earlier, we're having what's called load shedding, which is in the U.S. we call it rolling blackouts. And it's a lack of electricity for the whole country. So in Johannesburg, there were basically no traffic lights. Almost the entire city had no traffic lights. There were a few that were working at some main intersections, but most of them, the vast majority, were not on. And that's a big deal. It was really like, it's okay in the daytime, I think, because you can see the cars. But at night, if you're not familiar with the city, you don't know if an intersection has a light or not. You can see cars approaching with headlights, but you don't know if there's a light because you're supposed to treat the non-light, the not working light, like a four-way stop. You're supposed to stop. But if you can't see that there's a light there, you don't know. So there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of uncertainty. And this whole thing of like not knowing if like they give you the times that you're supposed to have the blackout, and it's usually for a couple, 2-3 hours at a time, and they go in blocks, you know, so it might be 2 or 3 or 4 2-hour blocks, 3-hour blocks throughout the day. And sometimes they don't follow the schedule. So it's this feeling of being on edge. You really don't know if you're going to have electricity or not. And that's a big deal if you've never experienced that. We don't realize how much we rely on electricity. So, and businesses, I'm lucky because I have a battery backup, so I can have a little extra. Whatever system you're experiencing not working well, whether it's a political system or a healthcare system or whatever it is in whatever country, this is part of the falling apart. I guess there's one specific system I do want to mention, and it doesn't matter what country you're in. I think it's about the media, and it's that most people don't believe what the news media is telling us anymore. And I'm not sure if you're tracking it or not, but there's a growing mountain of evidence coming out now about intelligence agencies and governments having control over social media and mainstream news in general, and that this has been going on for decades. So we're not talking about political parties or specific leaders. That's not what this is about. It's that some of this information coming out is just so shocking that I know a lot of people don't even want to know about it. Or if they hear about it, they don't believe it. But the truth that there's, if you track it, there's just so much hard evidence now that's coming out that it's difficult to deny it anymore. And of course, you're not going to hear about it in the mainstream news. And I think it's important to mention that this is actually the first stage of the grieving process. The 5 stages, remember, the first stage is denial. So let's just name the 5 stages. Remember, it was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross who wrote a book about this. She identified 5 stages of grief. It's denial, anger, bargaining, and despair, and then acceptance. And so I just want to acknowledge that this is a very difficult subject that I'm bringing up. I know it's sensitive, and I'm sorry if it's troubling you that we're talking about it. So if you're feeling a sense of shock or fear or shattering or despair or whatever it is, just remember to witness the feelings. I invite you to witness and take some long, slow, deep breaths and just allow the energy to move through you. You know, it's not my goal to upset anybody on these calls, but sometimes to name the shadow is important, and sometimes to just name it and witness it is the most important thing. So if that's happening for you, I apologize, and I invite you to practice all that. Okay, I really don't want to take any more time here with going into the details of how things are falling apart. All you really have to do is look around, and you can see the truth of that. So what's our path through all of this? How do we get through this in the highest way? So as we keep talking about, first foremost is witnessing. And again, I made a little list here. This was important enough that I made a list to refer to, so forgive me. So witnessing is number one. And then also remembering that no matter how painful it is or how fearful it might be, or whatever emotions, anger, despair, whatever we're feeling, these are the times that we chose to incarnate into. So it's about seeing that all of this is divine. All of this is just part of the divine plan. The falling apart of the old is necessary so that we can birth the new paradigm of the heart. And our main job is to remember that these emotions and the reactions we're experiencing around the falling apart, they're just passing through us. So it might seem very real, but the ultimate truth is it's much more like a hologram than we know. You know, the 3D reality seems hard and fixed, but the enlightened masters have told us through the ages that that's not the case, that it's an illusion. And more recently, this is what quantum physics has discovered as well, that we're living in a hologram. So we can all benefit from remembering that principle and knowing that we're not humans. We're not humans having an occasional spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings. We are the soul. We are pure awareness, and we are having a temporary human experience. Okay, so a good practice for right now is to review those five stages of grief, and we take a look for ourselves where we might be on that journey. And so just to name the stages again, it's denial, anger, bargaining, despair, acceptance. And to remember that this is not a linear thing. You know, it's not a journey linearly. Grief is more like a soup. It's a soup full of emotions and reactions and experiences, and we kind of bounce around all over the place within the five stages, going from one thing to another, and it's different every day. So it's a process and it's a journey, and it just takes time, and that's just as it needs to be. So, you know, we can all just allow ourselves to go through that process of grieving and feel whatever we need to. It's that practice of allowing, surrendering, accepting, just being okay with whatever arises in us, welcoming the emotions, you know, witnessing them, letting them go. And I think the really good news is that when we're doing that work and consciously focused on practicing witnessing and consciously engaging that healing journey, then we realize at some point along the way that we're moving into greater and greater states of joy. And I know I've told the story before, but it does bear repeating, I think, about the African grieving rituals. I'm reminded of it, especially because I just landed here in Africa. And the story is that the Africans do these grieving rituals. So when somebody dies, they have a gathering, and it's not what we think of in the West as a traditional funeral. It's a time when everybody's allowed to grieve openly, and there's screaming and crying and wailing. And there was one woman at one of these things where a Westerner noticed that she was very joyful. And it was so noticeable because she was glowing. And so the person went up to her and said, "Can you tell me, please, what is your secret? How are you so joyful at a time like this with such loss and bereavement?" And the woman said, "I think I can be so joyful because I have grieved so much." And I know that to be true for me. You know, I feel like when we grieve and really release all of that energy, it's so healthy and it's so good to let it go, that what remains is joy. So I think we can complete now on the subject of the grief that's in our collective consciousness. I just want to say a few more things about it. You know, it's not just that we're experiencing the grief over the loss of an old way of life and about war and violence and all the other traumas of life and past lives as well, but it's also that we've all got some very deep underlying grief over the loss of the oneness. We're all grieving at some level of our being because of the feeling that we lost our unity with everything when we incarnated as a human being. There's a part of us that remembers sometime long, long ago when we first incarnated into a human body. And it feels like we lost our connection to the source and to our own divine nature. And it was like we were one with eternity, and then suddenly it was gone when we took our human form. So there's a part of us that feels that loss, and at some level of our being, we grieve that loss. And I think when we're experiencing a loss in the present time in this life, it triggers that other deeper grief that comes from this bigger kind of cosmic loss. And that's also, I think, what's at the root of almost all of our human desires. Through our desires, we're trying to find eternity again. We're trying to find the lost parts of us. We're trying to reconnect to our wholeness. We're searching in the 3D world for what we feel like we lost. And we wonder, where did eternity go? And we think we lost it, but we didn't really lose it. Eternity didn't go anywhere. It's right here with us. It's been with us all the time. We didn't lose our wholeness. It was just an apparent loss. We are already whole. We're complete and perfect just as we are. It's just that we're not conscious of it most of the time. And we catch glimpses sometimes of our wholeness. And when we do, that's what's usually called a profound spiritual experience. And that's the path of self-realization. Making the self with a capital S real, realizing the self. It's about realizing that we never lost anything and that we're divine and that everything that's unfolding around us in the 3D world is also divine, no matter what it looks like. And so this is why we commit to this journey of self-discovery to discover that true nature of who we really are and to start making the unconscious conscious. So we can remember our wholeness. Okay, so next topic, overcoming the fear of escalating war in the world. And this is also something that's up in the collective right now, so it feels important to name it and just talk a little bit about it. If you're feeling like many people I know, I'm just saying, fear of war escalating in the world, or even if you're not feeling that, but you know people who are afraid, I thought we might take a look at what we can do to move through this in the highest way and how we can help, how we can ameliorate, you know, the saber rattling that's happening in the world. So again, I made a list that I can share with you, me and my lists. So first, pray for peace. And that's something very easy that we can all do anytime. And our prayers are not to be underestimated. The power of prayer is beyond what we usually think and know. Second, one of the most important things we can all do is process any places in us that are in war consciousness. Okay, so what do I mean by that? When I say war consciousness in us, I mean any place in us where we're experiencing divisions, separations in consciousness, and so forth. So, for example, where we might be in judgment towards someone else. If we're judging others as bad or wrong, that's where separation begins. And it's that, it reminds me of that, that very well-known Bible passage where Jesus says, why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but you don't notice the log that's in your own eye? I love that one. And it means basically we need to process our own stuff first before we judge somebody else. And so I also just need to add here, just to be clear, that when we're talking about judgment, I'm not saying not to use discernment. And there's a difference. Discernment is very different from judgment. I know many of you know this, so it's probably a reminder, but I think it bears repeating. Discernment comes from a higher state of consciousness, and it involves using our witness capacity And mainly, it comes from a place of love. So discernment is where we feel connected to our hearts, to our higher mind, and we use those resources. We use insight, we use wisdom, we use compassion, and we see truth. We see the truth in, of a situation. And judgment is very, very different. Judgment is it's where we're dividing things into right and wrong, black and white, good and bad. We're usually basing it on assumptions, or we're basing it on what we're told to believe, but we're not really sure if that's true or not. And judgment, I would also add, it's got a sense of condemnation to it, which means it's not coming from the heart. So I just felt like that was important to be really clear about that, because I've talked about this before, and it, sometimes people get upset that I'm saying, well, if we should never judge, what about this, that, and the other thing? So it's about discernment. And also another thing just to be clear about, when I'm talking about processing our consciousness first, I'm not saying that we shouldn't also be taking some kind of action. You know, some people may feel called to go protest in the streets, or to stand up in some way and say no to war, or to say no to whatever it is in some way. And that's great. You know, if you feel that's your way to help, to protest or doing something physical. And in fact, I would say it's super important for everyone, for all of us, to say no to anything that we feel is not in alignment with our highest good. You know, not just war, but saying no is, it's an important spiritual practice for these times we're living in. I have a feeling that we're going to be practicing that more and more as we move through this time of such major change. You know, there's plenty to say no to nowadays. Anyway, another place where we might catch ourselves in war consciousness is if you notice that you're feeling angry about a situation and it starts spilling over into hatred. And so if that's happening, then it's really important to witness those emotions and to do some processing work around it. And so the last thing on my list here is to overcome the fear of escalating war in the world is we can focus on what steps we can take to build the peaceful world we want to live in, and how we can create the new paradigm of the heart in our own personal world. And so I just want to talk about that a little bit right now. So it's important to remember that where we put our focus and what we think about is what we manifest. And so with that in mind, we might want to choose to focus more on building the new paradigm of the heart and less on, you know, things like worrying about all the problems that we're told in the news. And again, I'm not talking about ignoring, avoiding, denying, suppressing, all that stuff. I'm not talking about spiritual bypassing, but if we do spend more of our time focused on the problem and not the solution, then we're feeding the problem. So focusing our thoughts on things like, what can I do today? What can I do right now in this moment to contribute to the new paradigm of the heart? What is one small step that I can take? And it might be tiny little things. It might be something like just an act of kindness, you know, or smiling at a stranger, or just making any kind of joyful connection with a stranger. Have you ever had that happen and you just notice how much it brightens your day? It can change your entire day. And then it's like a ripple in a pond, you know, it goes out and out and you affect all kinds of other people. So, you know, just sharing a laugh, practicing generosity, reaching out to a friend, any of these little things are actually super important. They bring joy. And that's a very high vibration. You know, just enjoying the little things of life is like one of the, those are some of the most important things we can do right now. Just like appreciating the flowers in your garden, or if you're in winter, enjoying the beauty of the snow or the, the wintry landscape, whatever it is. Another, my list here. What is a more significant step that we can take? So beyond the little things. So that's maybe things like we can start to vision what the new paradigm of the heart looks like for you in your personal life, and starting to take steps towards manifesting that vision. So for example, it might look like, starting to consider letting go of any old relationships that aren't working for you, considering changing any patterns that you feel might be limiting you, starting to visualize a dream job. There are all kinds of visioning practices, and we know all these. I'm not going to go into them, but it's like anything from journaling to vision boards, or just daydreaming, or, putting a strong emotion of joy and inspiration behind something that helps manifest it. And then lastly, it's also, spending time visioning what the new paradigm of the heart looks like for the collective. And that's a very inspiring and very fun exercise. And I suggest this as a home practice. I did suggest it a long time ago in a course that I taught in 2020 called The New Paradigm of the Heart. So if you want to do the exercise, you would ask yourself things like, what's the world going to look like in the new paradigm of the heart? And you get very specific, and you journal about things like, what's going to be happening in the cities? What's going to be happening in nature? What sounds might you hear? It might be very quiet. It might be, you might be hearing more laughter. What are you going to smell? What are you going to see? What are the schools going to be like? What is the healthcare going to be like? And on and on and on. So you can really get as detailed as you want to start visioning the new paradigm of the heart. And that's a very powerful exercise. And I'm sorry, I'm looking at the time, and it's time to close so that we have time for questions and answers. I'd like to close by reminding us that from a soul perspective, like I said before, everything's perfect. It's just as it should be. Despite the trauma we've been through in the past few years, despite the massive amount of shadow that's totally there for us to see, in the moment, despite all the traumas we've been through recently and for millennia, especially war, the truth is that everything's okay. We're learning our lessons. We're having the experiences that we chose to have before we incarnated. And the ultimate truth is everything's going very well. It's like everything's going incredibly well. So even though it doesn't look like it through the lens of the 3D world, we can rest in that truth. We can know that it's all okay. And, we're living in such a time of massive change. Literally the turning of an age. So things need to fall apart. They need to fall apart. We need to grieve that. We need to grieve the loss of the old way of life. We need to watch the dance of shadow and light. We need to see how this is all playing out. We need to witness it, process it, clear our hearts, clear our minds around all that. And we can practice every day by doing all the spiritual practices we know how to do. And I think so much of it is about choosing love, choosing love over fear, choosing connection over separation, and then just processing anything in our own consciousness that might stand in the way of that. And this is what brings the joy into our lives. And the more that we live in that very high frequency of joy, the more we're contributing to the global shift. And the more we experience the new paradigm of the heart in our own personal lives. You know, the world can be raging with all kinds of, you know, nasty things, but we can live in the new paradigm of the heart in our personal life. So even though these times that we're in might bring their challenges, this can really be a magical experience for us. It can be exciting and inspiring because we know that this is the time that we incarnated for. We came here for this. We came to help midwife the birth of a whole new paradigm on Earth. And we're talking about this massive shift from one age to another, from the love of power to the power of love. And we're the pioneers. We are the pioneers that we've been waiting for. And I don't know about you, I just get so excited and so inspired when I reflect on that. So I guess I just want to leave you with one thought. I know I've said this before on at least one of the monthly calls, but it was a very long time ago, and I think it bears repeating. One of the hallmarks of the new paradigm of the heart is that Earth is moving into a civilization of peace, not war. And human consciousness in the new paradigm of the heart will have evolved enough that there just won't be war here anymore. And so when we're living in peace and we know our place in the web of life and we know our connection with the rest of the natural world, then our planet is going to be invited to become friends with the other members of our galactic family. And we'll be able to participate with other civilizations that we share the universe with. So we'll be living, you know, in a paradigm that, well, I hate to say it, but what comes to mind is like something like Star Trek, you know, as funny as that sounds, it's going to be more like a Star Trek civilization because they were all about peace and, you know, supporting each other and, doing no harm, you know. And it's not that far off. It might seem like a long way away, but I think it's going to be sometime in the next 100 years or so. I think many of us are going to live long enough to see the beginning of this. We might not see it come to full fruition, but we'll see some of it. And we all agreed that we would come here now to help lay the foundation for it. And I think that's the key to remember that that's why we're here. We're laying a foundation, we're pioneering, we're midwifing. And so we're in this totally amazing opportunity right now because all of these little tiny steps that we're taking towards our awakening, it's a huge contribution to the manifestation of all the changes that we want to see, you know? Every single moment that we can hold those very high frequencies like peace, like love, like joy, we're helping to speed up the changes. And so I think it's really helpful in these very intense times, these very dark times, to remember that bigger picture. And so I hope all of that supports you. I hope it inspires you as much as it inspires me. I love talking about it. So, okay. I'm so sorry. We're running out of time so fast, and I wanted to get to several questions. We had a bunch of questions this time. So let's move along quickly here. I want to thank you for all the questions and the sharing that you send to me. I really do appreciate it. The way it works is if you're new, you can email questions in advance to courses@corelight.org. And if you're on the web call, you can type your questions in now on the Q&A board, and those will be for the next month's call. It's not possible for me to answer all the questions, but I do read them all, and I do try to get to as many of them as I can. Okay, the first question is from Sophie. She says, I had a question about mental health issues in general. In my neighborhood in particular, I'm seeing an increase in mental health issues post or not COVID related, where people are so engrossed in their pain that they cannot feel, see, or consider a way forward to connection and joy. I'm conscious that people in suffering are also a reflection of our untapped shadows collectively and individually. I'm working on my own shadow polarity aspects through the tools you've shared with us, through witnessing my triggers. How can we navigate best these transitioning times and support our neighborhood and communities with practical steps? So thank you, Sophie. It's a great question, great observation. I think so many people are seeing the same thing right now. You know, mental health is certainly an issue that's up. Like we've been talking about today, the trauma of the past few years has really exacerbated everybody's mental health issues. So just a quick response to your question, a few things come to mind. Number one is, like you said you're doing, it's processing yourself first, and I know you're doing that, so that's perfect. But that's the greatest gift that we can give the world. It's our own awakened consciousness. So first and foremost, we can all remember that. So if you're doing that and you also want to take practical steps, you can start by asking your guides. You know, you go into meditation and you just ask your guides to show you what is mine to do. So take a little time to do that exercise, and then you just wait. So example, you might find yourself, like an individual might cross your path, and you might just help that individual in whatever way you feel. And that's a small thing. And it might be actually seem like a small thing, but it might be a big thing. Because if somebody crosses your path, there's always a reason for it. You know, it's spirit brought that person to you. And so it might be as simple as just helping that one person. And the same applies to a community, right? So if there's a practical need and you become aware of it, then it's like spirit has put that in your path. So there might be a bigger project that comes across your path and you might feel like that's yours, you know, that's your thing to take on. And it comes through inspiration, you know, that's when we have inspiration, that's our heart opening. And when we hear that call from the heart, that's spirit talking to us. That's our own higher self talking to us and calling us to take that action. So to start by paying attention to those, you know, when your heart strings get pulled and you feel inspired. And then lastly, I just want to say, you know, I could go longer, but I just want to say one of the most important things we can all do is be an example. You know, be an example for other people to just do your own work on yourself. And that is then you become a role model. You know, it's through your own, you don't have to say anything. You can just stand in an elevator and people will walk into the elevator and they'll notice you and they'll go, oh, I want to know what she knows. I want to be like her, because they see you at some level. So your own awakened consciousness makes you a role model. You become that example. All right, let's move on. Just a reminder, if we get cut off, I'm so sorry. It'll be a sudden cut off because the electricity gets cut off, and I apologize. Michelle writes, I'm so grateful for your and Leslie's work in the world. I'm excited to learn more about the live courses when they become available. I have a question about the Spiritual Warrior Training Course. I notice a clenching in my system when I see the word warrior. I'm wondering if you could explain the use of the word. It feels to me so rooted in victim consciousness, where there's a warrior that needs to fight a perpetrator. So, Michelle, thank you. I really appreciate your asking this question. This is not the first time that somebody has asked it, so you're actually giving me an opportunity to share why we've felt it was important to call the course the Spiritual Warrior Training Course. And I know some people can hit a snag because of that word warrior, which has the word war in it. And it's interesting we're talking about war so much today. Warriors can be associated with violence and aggression. And like you say, you know, it can be interpreted in an old paradigm way, which is about fighting and victims and tyrants, and that's certainly not what we mean. The way that we're using that is more in a Zen kind of way. The way we're using it, being a warrior is about becoming a pillar of strength. It means that when we're faced with an unexpected change, we can respond with strength as well as with resilience. So it's about both things. It's about learning to be both strong as well as flexible. And also, being a spiritual warrior means that when life brings us a challenge, we keep going. We have determination, we have fortitude, we've made a deep commitment to our spiritual path and to our evolution in consciousness, and so we are unwavering. We are deeply committed to our awakening. And that's the quality of a warrior. So a spiritual warrior, in the way we mean it, has this deep commitment to develop qualities like peace, like balance, like love, especially love. I want to say a warrior is synonymous with courage. And courage, as we all know, that's a heart state. The word courage, courage, has cor in it, which is the Latin root for heart. The French word is cœur, the French word for heart. So it's about love. And the purpose of life for the kind of warrior that we're talking about is opening the heart more permanently, learning to live more and more in the heart. Ultimately, it's discovering that we're made of love and then being able to share that love with others. And so we're really talking about becoming a warrior of love. There's a little bit more I can share. Let me keep going here. There are a lot of ancient spiritual texts. I think of the Bhagavad Gita, for example, and they use war as a metaphor where, like in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is the warrior and he's fighting a battle. And it's about overcoming his fears and, overcoming limitations and awakening to a higher consciousness. And the truth is that sometimes, it can feel like we're in a battle. Like we've been talking about all on the call today, the metaphor is really about our human and our spiritual struggles that we're here to learn how to deal with. And so, spiritual warriorship is about that. I'm reminded of, if you do yoga, there's the warrior asana. It's practiced in yoga, and it's that pose that creates this physical sense of peace and balance in the body because we're grounding. If you know that pose, it's establishing this strong foundation in the physical body. Another example, samurai. Remember the Japanese samurai. Samurai translates as the way of the warrior in Japanese. And those samurai warriors, they dedicated their lives to very high principles like justice and courage and honor and benevolence. Those were the hallmarks of the samurai. So that also comes to mind. And it reminds me also of that famous book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which is also about, embodying those higher qualities of the warrior spirit. All right, I could go on, but let's stop there. And I have to apologize. There are a couple of questions I didn't get to that I'd hope to get to, but I would like to take just a minute before the electricity goes off here and close our call for today. So I invite you now to close your eyes and just breathe. Take a few long, slow, deep breaths and get comfortable. Breathing in the light. Breathing out any shadow that might have got stirred up on the call. Breathing in gratitude. Breathing in joy. Breathing in peace. And we offer our thanks. We give thanks to Great Spirit for this time that we share. We give thanks for the love that we receive and the opportunity to be incarnate right now in these beautiful bodies and to be able to go out into the world and to share our light and to share our love and to have this amazing experience at this extraordinary time where we are birthing and midwifing the new paradigm of the heart. So we pray for strength, we pray for fortitude, we pray for our warrior spirit to manifest the permanently open heart so that we may share our love with the earth, with all life. May all our thoughts, words, and actions benefit in some way, even if it's a very small way, all life, all sentient life on earth. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Alalaho. So thank you, everybody. I love you. Until next time. Bye for now.